The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching the weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, is it bracket buster or bluster? We'll delve into that, a little bit of pro and con here. The James Gang returns to Cleveland tonight, and no, sorry, there's not going to be any Joe Walsh. And we're going to tell you why one college basketball team that seemingly turned their game around this week, it's nothing more than a con.
Dave, first take on a Friday. Huge night on the hardwoods last night, but not that much intriguing or compelling. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Yeah, it's actually something real compelling, and it's going to be a little repetitive because we've talked about Raymond Felton on this show several times over the last couple of weeks. Loved the early part of the season. Gerald Wallace and these other players so excited about someone who could push the tempo, get the ball to them in the open court. Except Felton really wasn't meant to be playing the minutes he's playing in this shortened season. We had talked early about Portland not having a true backup point guard and the issues that could bring. Now look at how Felton has fallen off the table. And when your point guard falls off the table, your entire team does. Over the last four games, Felton 10 for 44 from the field, more turnovers than assists. Those are awful ratios. Sign of a guy not only physically a little bit worn down, he's already had 16 games of 33 minutes or more, which is not the way that he's meant to play, but also his confidence is down. And when the point guard's confidence isn't there, I know those of you who had the Clippers last night, you're trailing big in the second half, you're probably not worried because you could see that all you had to do was get the game close, and in the latter stages, Paul against Felton, you were going to be able to win it. And I know you had the Clippers, and you won it, and you probably weren't that concerned, even when behind.
I was concerned. Yeah, I was concerned. They were down 18 in the second half. I was definitely concerned about that ball game. But the handicap going in that Portland wasn't going to have energy turned out to be the correct handicap. The Clips didn't have much energy either. But Paul, the difference maker in that fourth quarter, and the Clips found a way. Wasn't pretty, but they got my clients and I the money. Oh, my first take for a Friday. We have to talk about the Pac-12 in college hoops this year. As a conference, the Pac-12, not just down, way down, probably the lowest rated major conference this season. And, you know, you look at the good teams, the Cal, Washington, Arizona, none of them are that good. And we say, you know, what's wrong with the Pac-12? Did I call it the Pac-10? The Pac-12. I'm still making that mistake. And I'm sure as all the conference names and teams get switched around over the course of the next couple of years, there'll be a few errors like that. But the bottom line with the Pac-12, why are they down so bad? What's wrong with the conference? Well, you start to take a look at what's happened the last four NBA drafts. And I'm going to read off a list of names here. O.J. Mayo, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love, Brooke and Robin Lopez, Jared Bayless, Ryan Anderson had a pretty good night the other night for Orlando against the Sixers, Darren Collison, James Harden, Taj Gibson, Drew Holiday, Jordan Hill, DeMar DeRozan, Quincy Pondexter, Klay Thompson, Derek Williams, he's going to put on a show at the All-Star game. Watch this guy in the dunk contest. Nikola Vujovic, a guy we bring up all the time for the Sixers when he's been hurt. That's a list of Pac-12 players that have been drafted in the first round over the last 4 years. Most, the vast majority of those guys were underclassmen when they were drafted. If you take that talent and put it back in the Pac-12, they're every bit as good as any conference in the country right now. But all those guys left, most of them left early. Have a little bit of a brain drain, a talent drain in the Pac-12. Don't expect them to be down for long. On the other hand, we talk about projected NCAA tournament wins. Pac-12 is one conference. You might want to think about betting under. All right, let's sort through the mailbox. We got a great letter from Andy in Indianapolis that we want to talk about on the show today. And Andy says, hey, guys, never miss a show. The sport I experienced the most success with the last 2 years was the NBA. Showed a great profit, and last year was amazing for me. This year, though, completely different. I just can't get a read on the trends and teams like I have in the last 2 years, and I've just had a losing streak where I've gone 2-11. Awful. I'm down money for the NBA season, and I'm sure the lockout is a main culprit. But my question is this. When you're having a bad season in a sport, do you consider throwing in the towel for that season, or do you try and change your thinking to rebound down the stretch? Great question, Andy. What's the answer, Dave?
It is. It's a dynamite question, and it goes back to the Raymond Felton thing we talked about at the start of the show, perceiving this NBA season as being different. This is a unique little sprint that might not tie into things that you've been doing in the past. So the first thing you want to do is, you know what, if you've had something that's been working in the past, it may not necessarily work this year, but don't throw it away because you may be able to make it work in the future. Biggest part, though, no matter what you're doing in any sport, are these postmortems, where you want to autopsy your results. Because a lot of times, what looks like a bad streak may not be. You may be doing awfully good work. Let's use a game like last night's Boston-Chicago as an example. We took the Celtics +8 here. And a big part of that handicap is how Rajon Rondo had outplayed so badly the Chicago point guards on Sunday. Now look at last night's game. You're taking +8. The starting point guard, you know, Watson for Chicago, in his 28 minutes on the floor, he does a -4 on the plus minus. If you're taking 8 and their starting point guard, who you're betting against, is sitting at a -4, you've got a good bet. You've got a very good chance to win that game. So how do we lose it? Mike James, who had played 2 games all year, comes in and turns a +15 in his stint on the court, something James will probably never do again in his NBA career. So it means you had a good opportunity. If the same teams play tonight at the same price point, not only do we bet again, we probably bet more. So autopsy those games and make sure, are you having good ideas that just aren't cashing, or are the ideas themselves not working? What I'd suggest to you, because this season is so different, if it's not working this year, but it worked in the past, don't worry about this year. Take that little bit of time off. If you've got something that's worked before, bring it back next year, but you don't want to adjust your habits to where you might actually hurt yourself in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer in that you kind of have to work your way through whatever kind of struggling streaks that you're going to have. And you will have, inevitably, you will have rough stretches like the 2-11 that you just went through. I've been through them. Dave's been through them. Anyone who's been betting for a significant period of time has gone through a stretch where you just can't get stuff right. And whether it's close losses, whether it's blowout losses, whether it's, you know, you kind of like 3 games, but you're slumping, so you only play 1 of them, and they go 2-1, but the one you picked was the wrong one, making the wrong decisions on which games to use, it can and will happen. What's the approach? When you're struggling, this is what I do. I'm going to take a day off, sometimes 2, sometimes 3. Take a little bit of time off, let the game flow past you, come back and take a fresh look after a couple of days. And the other thing that I'm going to do in any sport where I'm struggling, I'm not going to go nuts with the number of plays that I'm betting. I'm going to keep it real short. If a play doesn't grade out very high, it's not on the list, and it's not going to get bet. So that way, even if you're struggling, you're not going 0-3 one night and 0-5 the next and 0-6 the next and playing all these games. You want to bet more when you're seeing things clearly, bet less when you're struggling. And obviously this has been a struggle for you. Hey, take the weekend off. Maybe take till the All-Star break off. Come back, give it a fresh look. I'm sure you'll do just fine. If you're doing the work, if you're doing your due diligence, the results should eventually come. All right, Dave, Bracket Buster weekend. We're going to do a little pro-con here. You're a Bracket Buster hater? How can you be a Bracket Buster hater? Good TV matchups, lots of interesting games that you're not normally going to see, and that look on your face right now tells me already you're about to rip me a new one.
No, I already won this. Good TV matchups. Great matchups. Now, the reason we don't like it, and we found over time, the players and coaches don't like it because it's actually silly. They promoted it because they sort of need something at this stage. Before the tournament starts, ESPN needs a draw on this particular week. So they tried to create this concept. It's the bracket buster. It's a way for all these teams who want to get into the tournament to play their way in with these showdowns. No, over time it's turned out to be almost totally inconsequential. Very few of these games will have any bearing whatsoever on tournament projections. If anything, it tends to hurt the mid-majors more because it's adding losses to a lot of teams that wouldn't have that extra loss added. But what we found is, except for a few of the teams at the top, a game like St. Mary's Murray State, nice matchup. But look at all these other little teams that are forced to travel to play a meaningless game that's not on television against an opponent they know nothing about. We find coaches complaining, saying, look, we're in the middle of our conference season. This is a distraction for us. These kids are going to class. They've got other things that they could be doing other than making a trip that we don't need to have them make. And some of the trips are silly. A team like Nevada, traveling all the way across the country to play in the Eastern time zone. Why do you do that? Why do you make that team take that trip for a game that really doesn't matter? So we've read a lot from the players and coaches over time that they don't like it. So we don't handicap it as much as some other people do. If we know the players and coaches don't have their hearts into these games, ours won't be. And the one final thing, and we've talked about this before on the show, more games on the board tomorrow than you're used to seeing. That means lower and lower and lower rung officials calling some of these bottom tier games. That makes the results even more random.
Nevada-Iona, good game. Murray State-VCU, good game. All right, so there's a lot of not so good games on the bracket buster slate. And that's, I guess, an inevitability of the process. But the bottom line, as a bettor, we like things like bracket busters because it creates some intriguing situations where you're looking at a world where point spreads are set by these computer power rating determined formulas. Bracket busters gives a chance to make some money betting against these computer-generated power rating numbers that don't necessarily hold sway on Bracket Buster Saturday. Yeah, it's not perfect. Yeah, I agree with a lot of your criticisms. There's plenty of bad games, and it hurts mid-majors as much as it helps them because it's going to give a lot of good teams an extra loss and give the Tournament Selection Committee a reason for excluding some of these teams from the big dance. No question. That doesn't make it a bad thing. There are good games, enough of them to make it interesting, and it provides enough good betting opportunities that, you know, Dave, we're not casual fans. Neither you nor I, nor most of our viewing audience. I'm sure casual fans. But for the casual fan, it's a good thing. It's interesting. You get some mid-majors, some TV time, and it provides some intriguing games. All in all, when you weigh the pros and cons, I think it's a good thing. And it creates some excitement in mid-February, which is, frankly, a hard thing to do most of the time. Rebuttal? Or are you done? You're giving up.
I think I did enough here. Now, you know, when it first started, we used to dig through these games so carefully. Mm-hmm. Okay, there are going to be some subtle, special edges. And then we found over time, the games where we thought the biggest edges would be, players just didn't care, you know, because it was of no consequence. So there's this gamble. And, of course, one of the great conundrums in sports that there's no easy answer to. When do you play your best? It's not always when you're intense and when you're focused. Sometimes it's when you don't care at all, when you just go out there loose, confidence. Any of you who play a sport, if you're a golfer, you know a lot of days, the days you just relax, just go out there and just let the club do the work. So that's why these games are very difficult to handicap. In all honesty, 2/3 of the games on this card, I probably won't even look at.
That's another fine reason why the NIT always provides us with such good betting opportunities. Teams play that loose, free, easy style. Sometimes you can cash some overs with that. Hey, great question, by the way, Andy. Thank you for the opportunity, and keep those emails coming. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day, and you can get involved in the community. There are active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/postingforum.
We've got a whole lot to talk about this weekend. J.R. Smith is with an NBA team already. And we've even got a bracket buster game to talk about. Yeah, it's all coming up next in the Insider Six Pack. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action. from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
It's Insider Six Pack time, which means we're going to pop the top for a little weekend preview Insider Six Pack. Let's start with tonight, Heat-Cavs matchup. And, you know, we're getting all the usual buzz surrounding LeBron James' return to Cleveland. The Heat take on the Cavs. And, of course, on the court, a couple of key issues that we want to clean up right here. On Wednesday, we noted the excitement building in Cleveland as the Cavs got their backcourt healthy together for the first time. Finally, Kyrie Irving returning to mesh with Daniel Gibson and Ramon Sessions. Turns out that didn't last long. Gibson suffered a sprained ankle against the Pacers on Wednesday. Anthony Parker already on the sidelines, and now Anderson Varejão as well, their best low post player in terms of rebounding and defense. He sitting on the sidelines in street clothes as well. The question for tonight is whether Byron Scott is going to go with an Irving Sessions backcourt, which means they're going to be basically two natural point guards starting together on a lack of size, especially since one of those two guys is going to have to guard Dwayne Wade should they be on the floor together. And how about this for roster turnover? The last time LeBron James wore a Cavs uniform, how many players from that roster remain? One, Antoine Jameson, the only guy I was going to be on the floor tonight for Cleveland that played with LeBron in, what is Cleveland? It's not the Motor City, it's the Windy City. What is it?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame City.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame City, that'll work.
Tonight was going to be the debut of Carmelo Anthony with the new Jeremy Lin Knicks. Not going to happen. Not until Sunday. They're going to give him one more day off. They figure they can beat New Orleans tonight without him anyway. But here comes the real fun Sunday. Not only Carmelo Anthony on the court, but J.R. Smith, signed, sealed, delivered, will not appear tonight in a Knick uniform. He will be there Sunday, and he will play on Sunday. The Knicks are going to be a whole lot of fun to watch going forward. Probably not a team in the NBA, though, that's less fun to watch right now than the Hornets. They're hoping maybe they can get Jarrett Jack back in the lineup tonight. He's got a bad knee. He's missed the last three games. He's going to try to go in pregame warm-ups, but they've already ruled Emeka Okafor not only out tonight, but out through the All-Star break. Now, that's on top of Jason Smith and Carl Landry also being out in that front court. Here's how bad things are in New Orleans. You know those little 10-day contracts that you sign guys to just to patch through for a little while? They have three of them simultaneously right now. That's never happened before.
We mentioned earlier this week in an Insider Six-Pack item that Brook Lopez had finally started practicing with the New Jersey Nets, and now it looks like Lopez is ready for game action. The difficulty making a projection, though, and how Avery Johnson will use him this weekend, because the Nets are entering their first three games in three nights cycle. They start Saturday in Chicago, return home Sunday to play the Bucks, and then go against the Knicks across the river in Madison Square Garden on Monday, a showcase game for New Jersey. Now, the Nets would obviously like to have Lopez back on the floor for that showdown against the Knicks, so don't be surprised if he sees some court time in Chicago, sits out Sunday against Milwaukee, and then gets a start against New York. For Chicago, we may see Derrick Rose miss Saturday's game since the Bulls going to be favored by double digits with or without him, and they also have Sunday off. Note the rotation tweak from Tom Thibodeau that Dave talked about earlier, with Mike James getting many of those key minutes at point guard in Rose's absence, last night in that fourth quarter. 8 points, 4 assists, and just over 17 minutes of play, and the Bulls as a team, plus 15 during those minutes.
Bracket buster time. And we're actually using this to talk about a point that you should be following very closely starting tomorrow and now through the end of the college basketball season. Not as big a factor as it used to be, but still a factor. Last home game for the seniors. We say not as big a factor because, as Teddy talked about with the Pac-12 earlier, so many early outs these days. rare that kids stick around for the full 4 years. But when you find these settings in which they do, that can be very meaningful. First of all, guys who have stuck around for 4 years, a lot of them are going to graduate. There's an attachment now to the university, which makes these final games more significant. But as we'll get into more detail on some of these next week, but make sure when you do it, look for guys who came in as freshmen and played all the way through, not the junior college transfers that came in for a season or two, because those guys tend to be out the door when the season's over. And the one stat we've always tried to find, and we can't, the number of JUCO transfers that go to class again after they've played the last game in the spring, we figure it's pretty low. The reason we focus on this, you've got one tomorrow. James Madison goes to Detroit. Yeah, it's pretty early in the year, but the last home game for the Titans, four seniors playing their last game, a couple of whom have been big-time guys in the program. We start with Eli Holman and Chase Simon. Those have been cornerstones in this program. Also, LaMarcus Lowe and Donovan Foster playing their last game tomorrow. Yeah, a little extra focus, a little extra intensity level. This is a game that will mean something to these kids. Over the next 2 weeks, we're going to point out several of these other situations for you.
After getting off to a very surprising and strong start in Mountain West play, San Diego State now three losses in their last five ball games, and Steve Fisher may have to put together a game plan at Air Force without Jamal Franklin. If you don't know who Franklin is, well, you got to watch more college basketball. Bottom line, he went down with an ankle injury against New Mexico on Wednesday, was on crutches while the rest of the team was practicing yesterday. He leads the Aztecs in scoring 17.4 per game and rebounding 9.2 boards per game in nine Mountain West games. And Chase Tampley is the only other Aztec on the roster averaging double figures in those games. Worth noting also that Tim Shelton also left early versus New Mexico with a slight ankle sprain, but he is expected to be available against the Falcons.
We tell you a lot of times that when a team melts down on the court, it often means it's another meltdown happening somewhere else that leads to it. That's why we do so much of the postmortem stuff and go digging for the outside information. If you saw Mississippi melt down against Vanderbilt last night, a 102-76 loss on their own court, you saw a team that quit on the court. Problem is, it looks like they may have quit on each other. After the game, fight breaks out between Jalon Kendrick and Reginald Buckner outside the locker room. They actually closed the locker room door and kept Kendrick outside of it for quite some time before he was allowed in. No announcements yet of any suspensions. Here's what we do have from Andy Kennedy concerning that incident. He says, you guys would be amazed at what happens on a day-to-day basis. Now, we probably wouldn't be amazed, but we're accustomed to it. You got a little taste of it tonight. I know emotions were real high, and guys made comments or actions that obviously we can't have between teammates. Now, here's your problem for Kennedy. You're going to Kentucky tomorrow. Probably the last place in the world you want to have to play under these circumstances. What we're going to be following today, and it'll be a big part of the line-making process for this game, when they go to get on the bus, how many players actually get on the bus? Don't be surprised if Kendrick and Buckner might be spending their weekend in Oxford.
So here's a question, Dave. Play of the day, let's say it goes down. Mean you're going to brawl on air?
On air?
Yeah, off air, on air.
Well, let's put it this way. If I get a choice between you or Jacob, you know which way the punch is coming.
I hear you. All right. Up next, we're going to head to Friday night's NBA card as Vegas Sports Day continues.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at Livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's money time.
You are thinking about fighting.
Yeah, exactly. Kung Fu money time today. Yeah. All right. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Philadelphia, where the 76ers 3-point home favorites over the Dallas Mavericks. And here come the Mavs, 19-11 all of a sudden. They've reeled off 5 consecutive victories, and they've done it despite the fact that Rick Carlisle, well, you know, he's had some trouble, obviously, getting the team chemistry together. He's already had to blend in new faces to open the season. Then he lost Dirk. Then he lost Jason Kidd for a few. That's only the beginning. Look what's happened over the course of the last week for Dallas. Boom, their backcourt. That giant sucking sound is not jobs going to Mexico. The giant sucking sound is backcourt players for Dallas getting hurt. What have they lost? Jason Terry, he missed Denver versus a strained right quad, and he was not with the team tonight for, quote, personal reasons. Roddy Bubois, his father passed away on Wednesday. Not sure when he's going to rejoin the team. Delonte West, if you didn't see it, that was a pretty gruesome finger injury he suffered. He's going to be out for an extended period of time. 3 key contributors for Dallas, all in the backcourt, not going to be on the floor this evening.
So let's set the perspective here. I think, what do they bring to Philadelphia? Now, the reason, you know, we had mentioned at the end of the last segment that I don't want to be getting in a fight with Jacob, I was real concerned this morning because he builds these graphics out. And I thought, we've got a huge one to build out here. One of the biggest graphics we'd ever have to do. It's a graphic of all of the Dallas players that have played every game this season. I said, Jacob, can you type one name out there? And look, he did it for us. Let's take a look at how many Dallas guys have played every game. That's it, folks. Sean Marion, he's the only one that they've had available every time out. So yeah, there's been a lot of patching, a lot of gluing, a lot of rubber bands to get where they got. But this current 5-game win streak, it's not all that good. If you look at who they beat and who was missing, again, for the teams that they beat, they caught Denver twice with Denver's entire front court out. So it's not like the Mavericks are necessarily on their game. Okay, now tonight's perspective. Who have they got? They got 3 guards. Vince Carter, who's an old man and really can't play over 30 minutes a game very much. Jason Kidd, who they publicly stated they did not want to have play more than 25 minutes in any game till after the All-Star break. And Dominic Jones. Who's he? Well, he could be the Mike James of tonight for Dallas. That's it. They've got 3 guards available. One of the 3 they definitely don't want to use more than 25 minutes. Vince Carter's not a 30-minute guy anyway. That makes it very awkward, not only because they haven't played together much, there's not a lot of depth, but if backcourt depth and team chemistry is your issue, is there a tougher place to be than in Philadelphia right now?
Yeah, I mean, the Sixers really have the ability to exploit a lack of backcourt chemistry for any team. You look at Philly, number 2 in the NBA, fewest assists allowed. They're preventing teams from moving the ball effectively. They're number 1 in turnover differential. Defense creates them, offense doesn't turn them over. They're number 1 in assist to turnover ratio. Makes sense when you look at the first 2. And Philly, off a loss this year, and they're coming off a poorly played loss at Orlando the other night, a game in which they allowed the Magic to shoot 15 of 25 from 3-point range. Sixers off a loss, 8-1 straight up, 8-1 against the number so far this season.
Let's go to the Staples Center for the ESPN nightcap. We've got Phoenix against the Lakers. The Lakers right now an 8-point favorite. First of a 2-3 for these. They're going to meet again in Phoenix on Sunday afternoon. So here's a chance, guys. Even if you don't have action on this game tonight, you can be watching and looking for something in these matchups or in this game flow that you might be able to use on Sunday, similar to the way that we'll be breaking playoff games down for you when we get to late April. One meeting already this year, a 99-83 Lakers close game into the fourth quarter, and then they pulled away. What you would have expected to see, you did see that night. Kobe Bryant did go off for 48 points, but it was the inside game. For the full season, the Lakers are number 2 in the NBA in rebounding. The Suns are 26th. What happened that night? Board domination, 49-35 for the Lakers. They may dominate the boards again tonight, but it doesn't necessarily mean we get in a hurry to look to lay these points, because everything they give up in one part of the game, they sort of give away in another key part.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got a point guard gap here that may be second to none at the NBA level. Let's see that graphic real quick. In the NBA this season, assists per 48 minutes. We're going to prorate these out over a 48-minute span. Phoenix, with Steve Nash at the point, 16.1 assists per 48. Steve Blake for L.A., well, 5.4. Derek Fisher for L.A., 3.7. And remember, you don't add Fisher and Blake's numbers together because they're both prorated over a 48-minute span. In our postmortem that we did earlier this week, we talked about Kobe Bryant's declining shooting percentages. Bryant under 40% from the floor in 6 of his last 7 ballgames, coming off a season-low 10-point performance against Atlanta on Tuesday night. And you look at the problem for L.A., the point guards can't penetrate. When the point guards can't penetrate, they're not creating those opportunities for Kobe to get off good, clean looks. And what might make it even more difficult tonight for L.A. in terms of their point guard rotation, Derek Fisher left practice yesterday early with a quote-unquote sinus headache. He's going to be a game-time decision this evening.
So we don't know for sure if we're going to see Fisher tonight, but we know who we will not see tonight. Devin Ebanks actually was a starter for the Lakers at the beginning of the year. We may not see him for a while. Sent down to the D League, possibly for an extended tour. It appears that he's in Mike Brown's doghouse, and Brown, in no uncertain terms, laid it out to him. Someone asked Brown, what will it take for Ebanks to make his way back up to the team? Here's the quote. Well, first of all, the guys in front of him have to be playing really bad, and we have to be playing really bad as a team in order for him to get an opportunity. And he's got to keep bringing it every day. Sounds like someone is not happy with the work ethic of one of his players.
When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the weekend college hardwoods when Money Time continues.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Saturday afternoon in Connecticut for a non-bracket buster matchup between Marquette and UConn. And this is a UConn team, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. UConn is not playing good basketball right now. They are not shining through adversity. They've already had 3 Big East losses by double-digit margins this month alone. Jim Calhoun may not be back at all this season, not with the team right now, obviously. They're not going to the big dance. This is a team that won the national title last year. UConn is not going to get a repeat invite to the big dance unless they win the Big East tournament, which is possible, but not likely considering the way they're playing. And they're not going to the big dance next year already because of sanctions. So you wonder, guys like Alex Drummond, do they stick around long enough to ever play a single tournament game in a UConn uniform?
It's a big part of breaking this game down because you can see that sort of lack of focus for Connecticut. That's tough. If you're a kid like Drummond and you've got an NBA upside and now you know that you'll have to last all the way to your junior year just to play a single tournament game, no, you could be gone. Napier, Lamb, a lot of these guys could end up being gone. So that impacts how hard they work every day in practice, especially when it's not Calhoun cracking the whip. We know who does work hard in practice. If you saw our postmortem on Marquette last week, we'd specifically gone out of our way to mention some comments from Buzz Williams about wanting to be the toughest team on the court in every game they play. You have to be in the Big East. So now that we're getting Williams through a full cycle, where now it's mostly his own recruits that are playing, we see that toughness on the court. So let's take a look at how Marquette has done in Big East road games since Buzz Williams became the head coach. This is where that toughness comes through. 22-11 against the spread. In the toughest conference in the country on the road. 5-1 against the spread on the road already this season. That shows how that toughness matters. And what you like to do is go through the Marquette games and see how much toughness comes into play. Because, again, we're not talking about a lot of NBA-type guys. There's not a lottery pick on this roster. But they fight. They've had 5 games this year already in conference where they trailed in double figures and came back to win. And look at the teamwork aspects. Number 7 in the nation in turnovers. And just in conference play alone, 30 more assists than their opponents, 43 fewer turnovers than their opponents. That shows where that toughness comes into play on the court.
Yeah, that's number 7 in the nation in assists, not turnovers. But UConn, they don't bring that same chemistry together. They've got 31 more turnovers than their opponents in Big East play. And the perimeter shooting, I mean, nothing short of awful. Just 28.4% from beyond the arc in Big East games. UConn, nice win over DePaul because they can get out and have fun. The game was played at a fast pace. The question for this matchup, are they going to be loose and confident following that DePaul win, or will the first signs of adversity send them back into the shell that they've been in for extended stretches so far in Big East play?
Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, another big Mountain West showdown. Our local Running Rebels playing against the Lobos. Home team New Mexico projects to be about a 5.5-point favorite tomorrow. Part two now of the New Mexico revenge cycle that we started earlier this week. They came through with flying colors in part one, went to San Diego State, got their revenge. Now, a big comeuppance they want to deal to UNLV after they got badly outplayed in the second half of that loss here. 80-63, the final score. UNLV shoots 51.7%, and look at the defensive pressure. They held New Mexico to 38.6%, forced 21 turnovers. 5 Rebels scored in double figures in that game. But that was at home, at the Thomas and Mack Center. And right now, is there a team in the nation that's got a bigger home-away dichotomy than UNLV? Playing in Albuquerque could mean a big difference.
Yeah, and, you know, dichotomy is one of those words we throw around a lot in the handicapping community. You look at a team like Arkansas, another example this week, where they a big win at home, go on the road, get annihilated. The Denver Pioneers, a classic home-road dichotomy team. Boy, their home court is strong. Every time they leave that home court, not so strong. Well, let's take a look at these UNLV numbers because they are certainly eye-opening if you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on with the Rebels. Here are the Mountain West home games. 4-0 straight up, 3-0 against the spread, covering by 11.5 points. When the Rebels hit the highway, however, 2-3 straight up, 0-5 against the spread, losing to the number by an average of more than 8 points per game. We watched UNLV blow a double-digit lead late against TCU, then lose the game in overtime in their last road contest. And, you know, we've seen a lot of that from the Rebels, obviously, given the numbers that you just saw. It's worth noting that both of the road wins, that 2-3 straight up, they both came in overtime. And note that the point spread margins only count regulation score. Also, one more thing to note, UNLV, 3 overtimes against the bottom feeders. They went to overtime against TCU. They went to overtime against Boise. They went to overtime against Air Force. Just not putting teams away on the highway. And again, that 18-point lead at the half against TCU, that didn't last. Worth noting, UNLV out-rebounded by a dozen against the Horned Frogs. And even when UNLV won that first meeting against New Mexico, by 17 points, the Rebels lost the boards 34-29. Tomorrow, they're going up against the best rebounding team in the Mountain West. Might be a tough task for UNLV to continue their winning ways, which aren't really continuing their winning ways, being that they lost 2 days ago. But, Dave, what do we got in terms of play of the day? I don't think we're going to this UNLV-New Mexico matchup. Where are we going to go?
Yeah, we got a big weekend on the hardwoods. Right now, the best. Let's go back to Connecticut, and let's look at Marquette against the Huskies. Again, the key here is focus and intensity. You know what you're going to get out of Marquette. You're going to get 40 minutes of tenacious basketball. Not always pretty, but always hard. What are you going to get out of Connecticut? Maybe 30 or 31 minutes of hard basketball. You've seen a lot of spurts against the Huskies because with so many distractions, without Calhoun there, knowing that their tournament hopes are already shot, they don't keep their focus. So this is the ideal time to exploit the tough team against the soft and disorganized one. Look for Marquette to go into stores, get a comfortable win over the Huskies.
And, of course, the look-ahead line says Marquette should be the underdog in that ballgame. Do we have a line parameter to offer them, Dave?
You know what? If it's a win situation, Marquette minus one. If it's just win and you're in, it's Marquette.
Marquette it is. That's the play of the day for the weekend preview edition, and that's going to wrap up today's show. For Dave Malinsky, I'm Ted Zivranski. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again on Monday. Monday.